Christian Yelich grand slams just hit a little bit differently. It was a fun day at the ballpark yesterday. Let's recap it next on Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in. It is a very happy Tuesday. I am Dominic Catronio, and I am pleased to be joined once again by Vinny Rotino. He is back here on the show. Welcome back. The horns and the trumpets are sounding.
Yeah, thanks, Dom. I don't know about that. Maybe a kazoo or two, perhaps. But no, it's good to be back on the show.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day, wherever you may be listening. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe to us on YouTube as well. We're simply at Locked On Brewers on YouTube as well on Twitter. And we hope to see all of our content coming out straight to your inbox here as the season progresses. Okay, 11 games in. Yesterday was probably the most fun we've had aside from the home opener, of course, this season. A 6-1 victory over the Pittsburgh Pirates. The big swing from Christian Yelich, a grand slam for his first home run of the season. Eric Lauer shoved. It was a great way to set the tone on, you know, it's a Monday after all the pageantry of opening weekend. This is the kind of game that gets you back into the groove and reminder, all right, this is game number 11. There's plenty more to go. It seemed like the routine is starting to form right now for the Brewers, and we're starting to see how deep this lineup can be.
Yeah, especially we talked about it kind of before we started the show, that how big this win was against the Pittsburgh Pirates. They play this team 6 times in the next 8 days or so. It's important that you do take advantage of these games and beat these teams like the Pirates. I think they were 18-19-5 against the Pirates since 2019 or something like that. So they've done a great job of taking care of business here. I think it's doubly important to take care of business here in this series because they did not look good, quite frankly, in that Cardinals series. And that scared some people, including myself, a little bit. I know it's still early, but just the way they played and how inconsistent they were on both sides, it's important that they go ahead and, I mean, you got to win this series against Pittsburgh, and they have a chance to do that tomorrow.
And they showed today the stat on Bally Sports Wisconsin yesterday that against the Pirates and the Cubs last season, remember the Cubs, they were a good team in the first half. They fell apart in the second half. That the Brewers, they went 29-9 against those two teams last year. Look, if you're going to be winning 95 games and be 14 games over 500, as you said, these are the games that you circle saying you must win these series. You got to sneak a couple sweeps in there. And I talked about this in yesterday's episode. I know the Pirates are not a very good team on paper. Their offense has certainly improved. They have enough young pitching to keep them in the mix. I mean, let's be honest. They made one mistake last night, and that was the pitch and to keep the starter into the game, Zach Thompson. We can get into that a little bit later. We're going to talk about the Yelly grand slam. We're going to talk about Eric Lauer having a great quality start yesterday, too. Don't let the Yelich swing distract you from that. What we've learned 11 games in, as well as previewing tonight's game, as it'll be Corbin Burnes making his home debut here in 2022. Let's get into it. Okay, let's just set the scene here real quick, recapping the game from yesterday. Brewers got on the board in the first inning for the second consecutive day. First three guys reach and a run scores on a wild pitch. It's exactly what you expect, because when you look at this lineup on paper, Vinny, when you look at Wong, Adames, Yelich, McCutchen, Telez, Renfro, that is a solid 1-6 that can beat you in a variety of ways.
It is. I mean, you got a lot of power punch in there as well, right? I mean, you got guys that can leave at any time to any part of the ballpark, and you got guys that can get on base as well. So, yeah, I mean, this team needs to start scoring runs, and they showed that tonight that they can. It's just a matter of, I think, getting some momentum in doing so.
It was a little frustrating in the first, given they had runners on first and second and nobody out, and those guys that I just praised didn't get it done. They struck out the side against Zach Thompson. He had a really good invisible fastball, it seemed, up in the zone. Guys couldn't catch up to it, so they got off to a slow start after that one run scored in the first. In fact, Thompson would retire the next 8 batters in a row before a double by Yelich, and that double by Yelich kind of set the stage for what was to come. So he rips that double off of Thompson. And mind you, it left the bat at over 100 miles an hour. So he hit the ball hard again. And you know, he had a rough, rough weekend against the Cardinals, and he draws a good walk against him in the first AB. Then he rips a double on a 2-0 pitch. And the reason I identify a 2-0 pitch, because you can tell me this too, Vinny, that when you're off 2-0 pitches, when you know you're getting a pitch to hit and you miss those, it seems to compound itself. But whereas he knows he's getting a pitch to hit on a 2-0 offering, and he absolutely crushes it, that seems like it can really multiply a guy's confidence.
And I tell you what, Dom, I mean, hitting is all about confidence. It's all about feeling good. It's all about not missing the pitches you should hit. When you start, that is a really good point. When you start missing pitches that you know are coming, like a 2-0 fastball, and you're just late on it, or you're just underneath it, or you're just ahead of it, or whatever, and then all of a sudden you start second-guessing yourself. So you're like, I missed that pitch. Now, what are they going to throw me, first of all? And now you start, again, you hold the bat a little bit tighter. Your barrel accuracy, it's kind of a technical term, but your barrel accuracy starts to, you know, not be as good. And all of a sudden you start second-guessing yourself. As soon as you start doing that, and we've seen Christian Yelich do that, right, over the last couple of years at different times, that's not a good thing, right? It doesn't take much doubt to not be a good hitter. And so, yes, great sign that Christian Yelich was able to hit that double and really smoke it down that right field line.
And he hit it at 102 miles an hour off the bat. And we talk about it a lot, that the fact that he's hitting the ball hard is good. And Dusty Baker famously said, well, exit velo doesn't mean exit hits. You know, you need to get hits, and he's actually getting hits. So let's fast forward here to the fourth inning now. And mind you, the inning began with some loud contact. Hunter Renfroe has hit some roof scrapers this season, and he hit a roof scraper to lead off the fourth inning, 107 miles an hour off the bat, but it dies at the warning track for the first out of the inning on the first pitch he saw. That kind of set the stage. Narvaez hits a sinking liner to center that Brian Reynolds nearly caught. Instead, it falls out of his mitt, so a leadoff single for Narvaez. Then Lorenzo Cain hits a shot the other way to right that Cole Tucker, who is a new right fielder to his credit, had it in his glove and lost it as he crashed it into the wall. Those are two plays, as the inning continued, that we had starred in the TV booth saying, okay, you got to create something out of this. What it just felt like you got two gifts, not necessarily gifts, but it was coming, that there was something good about to brew.
Yeah, Tim Dillard made a really good point on the postgame show for Bally that, you know, it seemed like stuff was going the Brewers' way in this game, and those were two plays that happened back-to-back that definitely went the Brewers' way. They were definitely keys to that inning, right? I mean, they put a little bit more pressure on Zach Thompson. All of a sudden, it looked like things were slipping away from him a little bit. And yeah, I mean, sometimes you just have to have the ball bounce the right way for you, and in this case, bounce out of both fielders' gloves just barely, just enough to go ahead and get that single for Omar Narvaez, and then that double for Lokane.
So you go then a four-pitch walk to Jace Peterson as the next batter, the nine-hole hitter. On-base Jace doing it again, so it loads the bases for the top of the order. And here's another one of the mistakes the Pirates made in this inning. Sack fly by Colton Wong to straightaway center field. Plenty deep. But Brian Reynolds trying to throw out Omar Narvaez going from third to home. Not a great runner, obviously, but he missed his cutoff man, which allows the runners behind him to advance to second and third. Meaning now, all right, the threat continues with a base hit, could score two, with Willy Adames coming up. So the Brewers at this point have now reclaimed the lead because at the top of the inning, the Pirates had scored a home run. So it's now 2-1. You're in the bottom of the fourth with two outs, and Willy Adames coming up. There is a lefty up and getting ready to go in the bullpen to follow up the righty, Zach Thompson, whose command was all over the place in this game. He walked four batters, the fourth of which being a six-pitch AB with Willy Adames to load the bases for Christian Yelich. And we set the scene. Yelich just hit a 102-mile-an-hour double in his last AB. Thompson has walked two batters in this inning, has given up loud contact in the inning, and you have a lefty up in the bullpen. Derek Shelton is not going to sleep for the rest of the week after this decision to not bring in the lefty to face Yelich. We were flabbergasted in the TV booth. I can't believe he did not bring in Dylan Peters.
I don't even know what he was thinking. I totally agree with you. I think Zach Thompson doesn't know what Derek Shelton was thinking in that moment. As a pitcher, you're grinding your tail off right there. You have that six-pitch at bat against Willy Adames where he walks, you don't make your pitch, you load the bases, you're facing a lefty. You have a lefty up in the bullpen. You're thinking to yourself as a pitcher. The entire team is thinking to themselves. I guarantee you the outfielders, you know how the outfielders come in close to center field so they can have, you know, a two-minute conversation with each other. Hey, how's it going? During the warm-ups when a new guy's coming in from the bullpen, I guarantee you the left and right fielders started walking towards center as Christian Yelich is coming to the plate. There's like no way that Zach Thompson is going to be facing Christian Yelich here. And sure enough, he does. And so I don't think Zach Thompson was even ready for this at-bat. And that's why you saw him hang that changeup that Yelich hit in that second deck.
Yeah, on a 1-0 changeup that he just destroys 429 feet for his fourth career Grand Slam. All four of them, it was kind of surprised me, but I guess it makes sense. All four of his career Grand Slams have come as a Brewer, which I guess makes sense because Marlins Park is such a ginormous ballpark. So, Yelly, Grand Slam, what a way to have your first homer of the season. He ends up going 2-for-3 in this game with the Grand Slam and with a double. And Jeff Levering had a great call. He gets the gorilla off of his back, not just the monkey, the gorilla off of his back. I loved that moment for Christian Yelich.
We saw Christian Yelich kind of start to show glimpses of snapping out of this thing, right? I mean, we saw him go the other way quite a bit. We saw that swing get a little quicker, a little more direct to the baseball. We saw him, I mean, he's continued to swing at good pitches. He's not walking. But then you saw that four punch out game against the St. Louis Cardinals. And then we're all thinking, uh-oh, here comes that ugly version again. And then, boom, this happens. So hopefully this snowballs and he gains momentum with this really great game that he had with that double and the Grand Slam. And this turns into something big for the Brewers and obviously for Christian Yelich.
And for Yelich, too, in the post-game interview with Sophia, he was very even-keeled as we expected. And I think that's something we've kind of lost sight of with Yelich. And it's unfair to criticize him. This happened a few times last season where he is so even-keeled. He doesn't let the lows get too low. He doesn't let the highs, like this moment, get too high. Maybe some other player would be parading around the bases and screaming his head off. And I'm not saying like it's a bad thing that he didn't do that. But what I'm saying is you are getting the same Christian Yelich, whether he goes 4-for-4 with two bombs or 0-for-4 with a golden sombrero. And I think that's a good thing in the long run in a mental battle that is a baseball season.
I mean, it is a grind, Dom. I mean, my goodness, it's like it's relentless. In the big leagues, I played just briefly in the big leagues parts of five seasons, and I got over 100 at-bats. But to get 600 plate appearance, 700 plate appearance in the big leagues, what a mental grind. These guys are out there. They're throwing 97s with nasty, nasty breaking stuff. They know your weaknesses inside and out. They know your tendencies on a daily to weekly basis, like if you're hot within the last 10 and where your hot zones are. So it is absolutely relentless. It's a game of failure, okay? Who can deal with failure the most? And Christian Yelich, you know, has some practice doing that in the last couple of years, and he's had the spotlight on him. And so, yeah, I think it serves him well to be very even-keeled. And, you know, I'm not going to make any predictions whether or not he's going to be back to that old version that we know and love of him, but he is showing signs, and that Grand Slam is certainly one of them.
Three quick stats before we start talking about Eric Lauer. Number one, Christian Yelich currently leads the team in average exit velocity. Number two, he is tied for the team lead in hits on the young season. Number three, he is now leading in extra base hits on this team with four doubles and a home run, and furthermore, he also leads the team with eight walks. Not saying he has to be 2019 MVP Christian Yelich, but if you get that kind of production the entire season, a 265 average with a 500 slugging, I think every single Brewers fan would take that right now.
100%. And so I think it's key for him to do that is for him to continue to get some protection in the lineup, both before he hits and after. So protection before he hits, what I mean is get guys on base so they have to pitch to him, and then obviously, you know, have a Rowdy Tellez or Andrew McCutchen really swinging a good bat. And we need Hunter Renfro to really start swinging a bat as well to offer that protection from the right-handed side as well. So hopefully that that starts to come to fruition as well. So, I mean, because obviously we know it's in there for Yelly. So he's going to continue to do what he can do and try and stay even keel and try and stick with his process. But then again, there's guys before him and after him that need to do their jobs as well.
And Renfro's just missed a couple so far this season. We're going to talk about Eric Lauer. Before we do that, remind you about our friends at betonline.net. They're your number one source for all your betting stats and sports information. I think I saw a run line yesterday that the Brewers were -1.5 in yesterday's game for the run line. I hope you took that one because they won by 5. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information. They've got live betting to playoffs, the esports, of course. The NBA playoffs are happening right now. Bucks a big win in game 1. You've also got the NHL playoffs coming right around the corner. You can head to their website today, and you can use your mobile device or learn more about the trends and get in on the action at BetOnline, where the game starts. Eric Lauer kind of gets overshadowed in this game. And I don't care what anybody says about the Pirates. That's a pretty darn good top three, and it's going to be the top three in their order for a long time. Between, you know, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Brian Reynolds, Michael Chavis, and our old friend Daniel Vogelback, who's always going to give you a good AB there in the cleanup spot. That's a solid 1-2-3-4 there. And the fact that he navigates traffic in the first inning, Eric Lauer, and then turns in a quality start with just one mistake, and you can argue it wasn't even a mistake, really, in the fourth inning. Lauer turns in 6 innings, 5 hits, 1 run that was earned, a walk, 5 strikeouts on 87 pitches. 64 of them were strikes. That is 75% just about of the pitches he threw were strikes. What impressed you most about Eric Lauer yesterday?
Man, it's what you just said, the strike throwing ability. He filled up the zone with all of his pitches. He attacked. He was up to 96 with that fastball. I mean, it was really jumping at the plate. When he is in that velo range, and he doesn't need to be 96 every pitch, obviously. He doesn't do that. But if he's in the 92, 94 range, he is really, really tough to hit. When he's down in the 90 to 91, 92 range, we saw a couple of starts from him at the beginning of last season in that range. He's not as effective. So when that velo is up there, he can really use that fastball at the top of the zone, use that cutter off that same spot. He pitches beautifully with that cutter and slider up. If I ever told you 10 years ago that pitchers were intending to throw sliders up in the zone, you would be, you know, that would be totally wrong. But now it's designed, and it's perfect. It fits perfectly with how Eric Lauer's pitches play at the plate, especially that fastball up. And that's what was so impressive to me. He's got a ton of room for error. I think we're going to, just because of how deceptive that fastball is and the cutter and the slider and how well they play off of that. And now he's starting to develop the curveball below the zone. I'm just saying this kid has a lot of room for error because of that. And so he does not have to be perfect with his pitches. He can rip fastballs off at the top and then use his other pitches off that. And so what's impressed me the most about him tonight is the fact that, like, this is repeatable. He didn't have to have pinpoint control. He didn't have to have pinpoint command. Although he did, he doesn't have to have that on a nightly basis. I'm just so impressed by this kid. He's been one of the best Brewers pitchers since July of last year. And super consistent. So I'm just excited about him and the fact that he's our number 5 or 4, whatever, who cares at this point. But I'm excited about their starting rotation because of how well Eric Lauer's pitched.
I want to remind folks about the permanent DH, obviously, that fourth inning, that rally that got to Yelich, the 9 spot was due up fourth that inning. Okay, I don't know if you get that rally without the universal DH. And that's not the overarching theme of this episode, but the point is, you got to recognize the moments that allows a pitcher like this to get 6 innings, because let's be honest, it probably would have been a 1-1 game through 4 innings if he had to go in there and hit for himself. So it's just something to keep in mind that he is able to just focus on pitching now. And by the end of the year, these guys are going to get even better by just focusing on pitching. The thing that most impressed me is how quick he was getting outs. I know you said fill up the zone, but he wasn't afraid of pitching to contact. 5 strikeouts is solid, don't get me wrong, but So many counts ended in four pitches or less, and there was really no hard contact against him. Yes, he allowed the home run, the first big league homer by Diego Castillo, and what a story that is, that he fouled the first, or the he swung at a pitch that hit him on the pitch right before, and then he hits a skyscraper for a home run that barely gets out in right field. Good for Castillo. What a story for him for his first big league homer. But otherwise, it did not faze Lauer, and later in that inning, he fields a great bunt from Jake Marisnik, who's still a speedy player. Lauer has really matured in front of our eyes. He left two stranded in the sixth inning. I have very, very, I wouldn't say, I don't think high expectations is the right word, but I would just say I'm anticipating something good to continue to develop from Lauer because he gets to sit behind this great staff. You don't get to take a day off against this rotation. And he's the only lefty in the rotation too, which makes his role a little bit more important until Ashby becomes more of a permanent fixture in this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, Lauer's a very, very important piece. He's the stabilizer almost at the back end of the rotation. And I think, again, he's going to be very, very consistent. I think we're going to be surprised if he does not have starts like this. And I'm not saying he's going to, you know, go one earned run through six and quality start every time. But I think we'll be surprised if he's chased out of there in the third or fourth or something like that. As opposed to, you know, an Adrian Hauser who can go the distance with that super sinker and throw a complete game shutout like he did last year, or he can, you know, get deep into the seventh or eighth inning just because of that sinker and how well it plays and how much he has developed. But I do think we won't be as surprised if he gets chased out of there at times in the third inning. I think we will with Lauer, right? Just because it's just the way that he presents himself on the mound, his demeanor, his presence, and then his stuff, and then just how simple his approach to pitching is. It just seems like super simple. I'm super excited about the fact that he's in the back end and he's going to really stabilize this rotation.
It's simple, but when he doesn't walk guys, he's one of the best pitchers on the planet. And that sounds like common sense, obviously, but he only had 11 appearances last year and only nine of them were starts last year in which he walked one or fewer batters. And I'm just breezing through the game logs here. Six innings, seven innings, six innings, five and a third, six innings. You get the point. When he's in the zone and he's filling it up like tonight, and your point saying that, look, he doesn't need to get swings and misses, but he's filling up the zone. Good things happen when Eric Lauer is doing that. And he's got the stuff to do it, to hang out in the zone, and big league hitters will be swinging and missing at his stuff. So great work from Eric Lauer. He gets his first win of the season, avenging the tough start that he had in Baltimore. We're going to wrap up this episode by previewing tonight's game, but before we do that, we'll remind you that this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models these days, it's almost impossible for your local auto chain to keep all the parts your car could need. That's where Rock Auto could come in. You don't have to go through all the pointless questioning at the counter. You can just go straight to rockauto.com to have all the access your car will, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. It's like having a warehouse right there in your office. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. You can even, you know, choose to spend 30 to 50% markup. I mean, sometimes even double the price of what it is on Rock Auto at the local chain store. It's reliably low prices for every single customer at rockauto.com. I've told the story. I'm on it every now and then. My parents have needed some stuff for their car. Told them to go to Rock Auto. I needed a new right rear mirror. Boom. They had it right there. Super easy. Everything right there on it, rockauto.com. So if you go to their website and they have their How Did You Hear About Us tab, if you write in Locked On, make sure you let them know that Dom and Vinny sent you. So amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Brewers looking to win the series, just a quick three-game series. Tonight, same time, same place, 6:40 first pitch, and then tomorrow it'll be a day game at 12:40 to wrap up this series before the first off day of the year on Thursday. JT Brubaker will get the start here for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he will be countered by the reigning NL Cy Young, making his home debut, Corbin Burnes. Now, Corbin, he pitched fantastic against the Baltimore Orioles last week in the finale out in the Bay. But with Corbin coming home, there's going to be a little more juice. What did you learn from his last start that you're looking forward to this start tonight?
Yeah, the combination between the cutter, obviously, is his bread and butter, so he's got to continue to establish that cutter, and he did a great job of that against the Baltimore Orioles as opposed to that first start against the Cubs. I do think the weather played a factor, and he couldn't really feel the baseball in that first start against the Cubs. But just to continue to establish that cutter, and then that curveball has really developed into just an absolutely nasty pitch. I mean, it just disappears. So I think the combination between the cutter, curveball, and then every once in a while he'll start to feel one of the other pitches, right? And he's got, at the end of the day, this dude has five legitimate pitches. Let's talk about them real quick. The cutter, the curveball we just talked about, that's two. Then he's got the exploding slider at like 88 to 91 miles an hour. Then he's got the nasty two-seamer that just, it's 97 and good luck when his cutter's on. Now you have to cover both sides of the plate at 97. And then he's got the changeup as well. And the changeup comes and goes a little bit, but when it's on, it's a plus-plus pitch. So he's got all five of those. I mean, I think just establishing the cutter, and I wouldn't really necessarily go away from what works, and he adjusts in game and he adjusts with the catcher in game, so we'll see, but I think establishing those two pitches is going to be key.
He faced the Pirates twice last season. One was a meh start by his standards, only going four innings, allowing nine hits and a no decision. And another start that was fantastic, working into the eighth inning in Pittsburgh in July, four hits, one run, and five strikeouts. So Burns has seen these guys plenty. He knows how to attack them. As for Brubaker, he's off to a very cold start so far here in 2022. He's allowed eight earned runs in just 7 1/3 innings. Two starts, he hasn't worked past the fifth inning at all this year. A start against the Cardinals in which he allowed three walks and four runs, and a start against the Nationals in which he walked four and also allowed four runs. So basically, be patient with JT Brubaker getting the start tonight for the Pirates. And just briefly here, I want to take a moment to remind everybody that we are only 11 games into the season. So there is still a lot to figure out. We always talk about, you know, what's going to be a surprise so far of the season. I mean, last year, the Brewers, again, there were two games under 500 in May, and then Willie Adames arrived. We all know that. But I mean, the Rockies won yesterday, and they're off to a 7-3 start, whereas the Phillies are 4-7 to start. The A's are going to be above 500, which nobody expected that. I mean, there is so much baseball still to be played, Vinny. And I know we're in the middle of the NBA playoffs and coming off of a tough loss for the Packers in the playoffs, but you don't have to live and die with every single game in baseball. Not yet. You can sit back, relax here in April right now.
You can. I agree. And as a player, I was the exact same way in kind of understanding that. I got to say, as I'm away from the game, the farther away from the game you get, the harder that is to really understand and comprehend, especially when just looking at like the way the team plays. So I'm just a little bit on a little bit of a roller coaster after that St. Louis series, and it is early, but when you see some of the key pieces that you need to be consistent all year long in order for this team to really go deep that aren't there, aka a Devin Williams, and how he struggled those last two outings, you just get a little concerned. So now, again, understanding that, okay, there's some easier spots in your schedule that you really need to take advantage, and this is one of them, and then they come out and play like they did last night, that is a really good sign.
It's all good feelings right now. As we wrap up the episode, I want to remind folks, today is a big day in Brewers history, by the way, Vinny. We talked about it on Sunday, of course, with it falling on Easter, but today is the actual date, April 19th. Of Dale Swaim's walk-off home run on Easter against the Texas Rangers for Team Streak in 1987. If you haven't, scroll back on our podcast feed. We've got a great interview with Dale Swaim during the lockout that we have up on our feed. And he's one of your favorites, I know, Vinny. You guys had a lot of fun. It's him coaching you. Today's the actual date of the Easter Sunday walk-off that Dale Swaim hit.
No, I mean, I remember it. I was only 7 years old. And how about that call from Bob Uecker? Just an electric moment. I mean, absolutely packed in the stadium at County Stadium, Milwaukee County Stadium. So, I mean, what an electric moment for the franchise and for Dale Swaim. yeah, it's obviously, go check it out. It's super cool.
Yep, it's very, very cool. So scroll up on your podcast feed to find that one or onto our YouTube page as well. Vinny, it's good to have you on. I know we only have you on part-time these days, but any moment we get with you, where else can we find you? I know you've got some other stuff going on right now.
Yeah, doing the Bally, obviously doing pre- and post-game show with Bally Sports Wisconsin, and then also I'm on WTMJ doing Brewers Extra Innings with Matt Pauly, so make sure you guys tune into that.
Awesome. Fantastic. He is Vinny Rutino. He is back, at least part-time, with us here on Locked On Brewers. I am Dominic Catronio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Brewers win yesterday 6-1. Tonight at 6:40 with the reigning Cy Young winner on the mound. Hope you all can tune in to Bally Sports Wisconsin or to WTMJ. Until next time, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.